Antonia, would you kindly do the roll call?
Any day. Okay. Chairperson David Withey.
Present.
Vice Chairperson Robin Paris. Board Member Michael Blake.
Here.
Board Member Stephen Crone. Board Member Barbara Watkins.
Present.
Okay. Will you all join me in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you all. All right, working down the agenda here. Has Commissioner Cannon come and gone? Okay. All right, before we get into the crux of the meeting and the presentation on the portfolio, we'll open up to public input. Going once, twice, gone. We'll close that portion of the agenda and we'll come back around and open it again after the presentations. Okay. Antonia, I don't see on this agenda the
minutes?
No. This doesn't look like the agenda that was emailed.
Well,
it doesn't have the election, the officer elections on this.
It's right on the first page.
Oh, did I miss that? I looked right past it.
Yeah, part one.
500, 501.
There we go.
Not, numbers aren't necessarily in order, you'll notice.
Perfect. Okay. All right. So this is the time of year that we discuss chairperson, vice chairperson positions. Unfortunately, while we have a quorum, we don't have our full five members. I don't know if a motion needs to be made in order to push, but first I'd like to open it to see if anybody has any thoughts on the subject and go from there.
Chairman's prerogative.
I say we push it to the end if they're come.
All right, well, let's do that. Let's push it to the end of the agenda and see how that stands, and we'll make a decision then whether to push to the next meeting or not. Okay. All right, and the approval of the minutes. Did everybody get a chance to read the minutes from last time, last meeting? Any questions about them?
Move approval.
Any issues? You second?
Second.
Board Member Watkins?
Aye.
Board Member Blake?
Aye.
Chairperson Withey?
Aye. All right. Okay, with that, I think we can go ahead and have the presentation from David and ANDCO. And I understand you brought a special guest today.
I did. Good evening, everyone. I am here with actually two agenda items this evening. Of course, we're going through our quarterly report. I also have some update numbers for you, but also for informational purposes only, we have Rochelle Hayes from American Realty, who has been one of the steadier, her firm has provided one of the steadier returns, or been a source of one of the steadier return profiles in the portfolio. The American Realty Fund is one of two real estate managers here. As you're aware, we've got them as the kind of the conservative core. And then paired with them, we have Intercontinental. So Rochelle is here tonight to give us an update on the firm, people process, and also an outlook on the product, and you know what they see in store ahead for us as far as returns go. So if I may, I'd like to open up with some good news, and then I'll take possession back of the microphone, and we'll go through at length what transpired during the quarter.
All right, well, thank you. My name is Rochelle Hayes, for the record, and I'm with American Realty Advisors. And you all hired us in 2010. But I do come with good news. So what I'm going to do is a quick review of the company, who you hired, talk about the fund that you all are invested in, and then we'll talk about what's happening with real estate briefly. All right, so if you flip to page 7 in the book that I put in front of you, also my card you will find, and I left you a nice ARA pen, red pen, for Valentine's Day. All right, so it just happens to be red. So on slide 7, just as a reminder, American Realty Advisors started in 1988 by a gentleman named Stanley Eisman. He still runs the firm. He is the CEO and chairman of the firm. We have 120 employees within 8 offices around the country, and we are 100% employee-owned. We are not owned by anybody else, a bank, an insurance company. We are just a real estate company. And as you may remember, I am local. I live in Sanford Lake Mary area and grew up here, Winter Park, so I am a total native of this area, but we are headquartered in Los Angeles. So if you flip to the next page, you can see that we've been growing substantially. Real estate's been a very popular asset class to invest for pension funds. So we are currently at $9.3 billion in assets under management, and we work with 539 institutional clients around the United States. We have 120 of those clients that I work with just in Florida. So there's a lot of municipalities that we're working with here just in the Florida area. On page 9, I can say that we've had no non-standard regulatory investigations against the firm, no conflicts of interest, and no litigations with clients. So we have a clean slate since the day our doors opened. And then, of course, on slide 10, we do take sustainable investing very seriously from every building that we own around the United States, working to reduce carbon emissions, waste reduction, water. We're improving water efficiency and energy, and we have a lot of awards to the right in several of our buildings. So let's go ahead and jump right into the core fund that you all are invested in. And want to remind you all why you're invested in commercial real estate, private real estate funds. One, they're very diversified. Two, they're not correlated to stocks and bonds. So whatever's happening with stocks and bonds, we would actually, if stocks and bonds go down like they did in 2008, we were the shining star in a lot of the portfolios. We are currently that just because the stock market went down at the end of 2018. And as far as this the report that Dave's gonna give you. But it's nice that it's not correlated. So what we do is we actually lag stocks and bonds. So when we do come out of a recession and stocks and bonds come back up, we're going to be slow to lag and come back up. But what happened right after 2009, the GFC, the Great Financial Crisis, commercial real estate became popular within 4 quarters, and everybody wanted back in because it acts as both a stock and a bond, in that it has the income that comes off the properties based on the leases, which acts as like a bond, actually pays a dividend back to you, and then it has the stock component based on the appreciation of the building. 70% of the return is based on income. So for that reason, it's a stabilizer for your portfolio. And yet it's getting really good returns, 7-9% over the long term, where bonds are yielding 2-3%, and the stock market's extremely volatile. So it's a stabilizer. What we're investing in is high-quality, income-producing properties in the area of office, industrial, retail, and multifamily, only in the United States. Our team is located on slide 13, and Scott Darling, the president who also runs this portfolio, is also a graduate of a Florida State college. Every time I say that, somebody picks up.
Said Florida State.
Yeah, and that's what happened last time. So it's either a good thing or it's a bad thing, so I try to abstain and not.
But I'm just trying to, you said Florida State, the one in Tallahassee?
Yeah, no, he went to a college in Florida.
In the state of Florida.
In the state of Florida. It happens to be FSU. So sometimes my board members are like, go FSU.
And yet he was still able to get a job.
And there we go. Perfect. Great tee up. In any case, so he, even though they're located in LA, he has a lot of family in Florida, so he has interest here also. Okay, the fund on slide 14 is at $7.19 billion in assets. We own 73 properties around the United States. Our cash position is low at 0.9%, just like your equity and bond managers. We want to put that money to work, so we're not holding a lot of cash in the fund. Our leverage ratio is a very important number. There's other real estate companies out there that have used leverage over the past couple of years to bump their returns. We never did. We've always stayed between 18 and 23%. So we're a very conservative company, yet getting those nice competitive returns. And that, what you see there on page 14, the leverage ratio, the first one is 23% excluding our line of credit, and then 24 including our line of credit. That's all LOC is. As far as...
What's your source on those funds?
I'm sorry?
On the credit funds, what's your source?
Meaning what? How's our debt made up?
Yeah, where do you get the money?
So 86% is on fixed rate, and the remainder on floating rate based on LIBOR. So we do a very small percentage.
Do you know what your average cost is right now?
We are at 3. We used to put it in here. It's about 3.6. We really took advantage of the low interest rate environment and renegotiated a lot of our leases, and we've been able to get it down. Our weighted average cost of capital is what you're asking for.
And do you exactly? And any forecasting on what your cost is going to be 5 years out or 3 years out, or what? What kind of metrics do you look at?
Well, you look at everything, and yeah, we're watching very closely because we're so low as far as our leverage on the property levels. We are constantly trying to be creative in that area. In fact, since you brought it up, we did what's called KFRED deals. Only less than 2.6% of the total portfolio did we do this, but they're structured debt instruments that are sponsored by Freddie Mac, and the underlying asset is multifamily, which we know really well. So we've done three of these deals, and it gives us a 9% return, which adds cash back and provides cash to us. Hmm. Our prediction, obviously...
Forecast.
Not a prediction. Our forecast...
Prediction suggests crystal ball.
Yeah, well, that too. We can't really forecast the debt. I mean, I do have a debt schedule in here, and no more than 2.6% of the total portfolio comes due to even, I'm sorry, 6.2 in 2028. So we're not going to be doing a lot of renegotiating. So I would say if we're doing 6% of the total portfolio, we may creep up to 4% at the most, but we're not going to be exposed much at all.
Okay, thanks.
That's a great question. So as far as a number, our lease percentage in every one of those 73 properties at 95%. Even in 2008 and 2009, we were down to about 86% and came up. That's something that we look at. We want to be fully occupied in most of our buildings. And then as far as the number of investors in this fund, it's 434. All right, so let's look at your fund on slide 15. And talk about what you all have been doing. You've been doing an excellent job per your consultant in dollar cost averaging into this fund since 2007. I'm sorry, you all invested in 2007. I was here in 2010 is what it was. So you've done a really nice job, but unfortunately, you invested right before the downturn in the commercial real estate market. So your return, if we were to look on the bottom part of that page under since inception, the far right, and you're going to look at the third number down, that is your total gross return at 5.16. So that's what it's been since inception. However, over the past 5 years, you've gotten a nice 10% return, and your one-year number at 8.69. When I came in originally and introduced this to you all to make a decision to invest, I said that this is really supposed to do between 7 to 9%. Mm-hmm. And that's what it's doing. So we're real pleased with it. So your $2 million investment equals 2.05 as of December 31st. So it's been getting really nice return. Hi, my name is Rochelle.
Hi, Rochelle. I'm Robin.
Nice
Harris.
To see you. I'm talking about your investment in real estate
portfolio.
Yes. On page 16, these are our metrics that we are forecasting out, Michael, and what we're doing is we're starting to tell you what our target was for the year, upcoming year, and then also tell you what the results were so we could close out 2018 and tell you, see how we did. So as far as acquisitions, we were very active in 2018. We were predicting we'd only spend $700 to $800 million. In fact, we spent $1.05 billion in new properties. And then as far as our target for 2019, we will not be as active as predicted or forecasted. And although a lot of the questions I get from the boards is, how are transactions right now with real estate? Are you slowing down? Are you at the end of your cycle? We like to say we're at the mature part of the cycle for real estate, which doesn't really mean anything. We could sit here for a couple years. It could be nice and boring at this mature level. But there are still transactions going on. We'll go through periods, maybe 1 to 2 quarters, where they do decrease and there's not a lot out there, but then it comes right back up. And there's several ways to invest in real estate. There's core funds, which you all are invested. There's value add funds, which we also run. Some of our bigger clients that have been with our core will move into a little bit of the value add. It gets about 11 to 13% return. And then there's opportunistic funds. And those are usually the big state plans that will, because they already have exposure everywhere else. But for the most part, the core fund is the best way to get that stabilization between stocks and bonds.
Question for you. The value add fund that you're talking about, are the higher returns a result of more leverage?
A little bit. So this one's about 23%, the core fund. Mm-hmm. The value fund's about 43%. But they're also, we're buying properties that probably need more CapEx put into mm-hmm. them, more aesthetics. Maybe it was an owner that got into trouble and they need us to save the building and buy it. There's several reasons that we're finding these properties, but it's doing really well. We're real happy with the value fund also. All right, so what we have been doing on page 17 and 18 is repositioning our portfolio and getting rid of a lot of the dead weight, a lot of old properties. So this remember this fund I told you started, well, I didn't actually, it was on the other page. We started this fund in November of 2003. And so we've had a lot of properties that have needed to be either money put back into them or sell them. So on page 17, this has been our disposition activity, the ones we've been selling. And I'm going to bring your attention to the bottom of the book. The average age of 18 years has been the age of these buildings we've been selling. And so since 2016, we've sold $1.7 billion, and we've purchased $3 billion in new properties, which if you turn to the next page.
I'm sorry, if we can go back just for a second.
Yes, sir.
First off, these all are transactions on both of these pages for the core fund only?
Correct.
And are these buildings 100% in the core fund, or do you share buildings or properties between other funds?
We are not allowed, and we do not. This is 100% okay. Core fund.
And the age of disposition, is that like the age from CO, or is that an effective age, or how is that number determined?
The year it was built.
From the year it was actually built.
Yeah.
What if a property was purchased that was substantially rehabbed prior to your purchase?
Yeah, we're going to include that. We do renovations. You'll see actually at the top of the column on page 17, it built or renovation. So, for instance, 150 North Wacker in Chicago. You can see it was built in 1970, but we renovated in 1992.
Good. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And so if you turn to slide 18, this is the average age of new buildings, and you can see the average age of acquisition on the very bottom there in red at 3.6 years old. And then leased about 98%. So what we're doing is we're buying a lot newer buildings on Main and Main in major metropolitan cities for working with national corporations as tenants. So we're really locking in long-term relationships, long-term leases with escalation in the leases to really lock in that net operating income off those properties. On page 19, these would be areas that have been accretive to our outperformance. So as a result of this repositioning of the portfolio, we've outperformed in 2017, 18, and expected to do so in 2019 compared to the Odyssey, which is our benchmark, similar to stock market. The benchmark's S&P 500, our benchmark would be what's called the ODCE, Open-End Diversified Core Equity Index. And that's, so you'll often hear the real estate manager say Odyssey. So in these four areas, we like to dive really deep into see where we are getting more return. Is it from property selection? Is it the type of buildings that we have been buying, which the allocation decisions? We started buying more industrial properties about 3 years ago. Obviously, Amazon's and most of the companies out there want to be closer to the consumer, so they want a lot of storage. So we started doing that about 3 years ago, and now all the real estate money managers are getting to it, industrial. industrial properties don't cost that much, maybe on average 60 to 120 million. So you'll see a little bit more activity there, and that's why our anticipated our budget for next year in new acquisitions is a little bit lower, because we're going to be buying some more industrial properties. And then I did mention on the very bottom of this page, on page 19, that we have done some structured investments called KFRED deals. And we are also doing what's called managed core. We now have five properties that we've bought and built. The reason we're doing this, we went into the Boston area and we really wanted to be in Boston, but we would have to pay a 30% premium to buy the buildings. So we found land and we built buildings. And one is adjacent to Harvard University. It's more for faculty and executives in the area. And then it's got Whole Foods on the bottom. It's got retail on the bottom. So we do have five properties. If you flip to the next page, on page 20, this is where all our properties are located. I want to emphasize once again that it's a very diversified portfolio, not only by property size, which are the bubbles, but by geography. Less in the Midwest, more in the West. That's really based on the gross fair value of the properties. So bigger buildings over on the West Coast in California and New York. And then diversified by property type. And these are considered the four core property types. There are other managers that will go into hotels, skilled nursing facilities, restaurants, but this is true core. So on page 21, we just added this to let you all know, since you're one of my Florida clients, that we have committed about $480 million in capital in six properties in the state of Florida. We've had the first three on that list over to the left, Kendall, which is, you know, down there in Miami, St. John's Town Center in Jacksonville, and one in Weston near Fort Lauderdale, all retail centers anchored by Publix. And then the last three, 4th Street at Delray is a brand new property that we're building in Florida. And it's located on 4th and 5th. It's where the library was. It's going to be mixed use, so we will have some retail on the bottom. IPIC Movie Theater is moving their headquarters from Boca to this location, and then we'll have some office on top. And then the last two are industrial that we bought down in South Florida, which we have been focused on industrial in Miami for probably 8 years, and we finally found two pieces of property right by the airport. All right, so page 22, we're not going to spend much time on here, just to point out that we're comparing ourselves to our peers in the Odyssey, that benchmark, and just showing you where we're going. The first one, just we're increasing our exposure in industrial, would be the first bar there on the first graph. And if you see anything you want to ask me about. And then page 23, this is to show you where our top 10 markets are across the country and our top 10 properties. When I came in, we had not purchased Apple's building. We own Apple's building now in Cupertino City. They did a 10-year lease back with us. We bought it in 2011, and it expires in 2021, and we're in negotiations currently. Every tech company wants to be out in Cupertino City, so we're not concerned that they won't fill that building, plus their legal team is going to be staying there. And the next page, 24, these are our tenants, the biggest tenants we have in our building. Very diversified also, Amazon's, Google's, IBM, Ancestry.com. And then our lease rates, like I said, on average 95% on page 25. And then 26, Michael, back to your question. This is our debt management page. And, weighted average cost of capital actually since December 31st has gone up to 3.97. So it has increased. And the debt schedule over to the right, remember this is that 23% debt that's on the total fund. No more than 6.2% comes due in 2028. So we actually have no debt on our company balance sheet, and the only debt we have are on the properties in our funds. All right, and then 27, the next three pages are examples of some recent acquisitions. I'm not going to go through those. I'll let you all read those at your leisure. And then just to let you know, in the back we have every property that we own. You can look and see the dates that they were bought and where they're located, and actually the gross fair value of them. And then there's the pages where all the Florida clients we have, and then the terms to invest in this, which you all already know. So I first off want to say thank you so much for having us be part of your investment team and open it up to any questions, additional questions.
Could I ask one? Michelle, could you get us up to speed on fund flows, your queues, where you are on that, and also projecting ahead on that?
So currently, we are accepting money the next quarter after your documents are signed, and we have no queues for money to go out. So we're accepting money currently, and this has been the first time that we've actually been able to accept it the quarter after. We've had our clients, well, except when you all invested with us a couple years ago, but we've had a two-quarter queue, three-quarter queue to get in, but right now we're taking money immediately.
And your, I have one more question, your outlook?
For real estate.
Your outlook for real estate?
We just like to say steady as it goes. I mean, we feel really comfortable with the way that we've been building this portfolio to be steady over the next couple of years. So we're real comfortable with it and just still remaining active and see some transactions out there. We have a good pipeline still. So we meet every Monday and talk about what's in the pipeline, and there's still a good 10 properties right now that we're looking at around the country. All right.
Did you have a schedule in here of like when leases were expiring?
You know, we used to. And somebody took it out, but I can get that to you because I think that is so pertinent to all of this. I can get that to you all. It's very interesting to see. Our weighted average lease expiration is between 6% and 7%. We call it WALE, that's the acronym. But that tells you of all of our leases, it's on average about 6% to 7%.
If you look on page 24.
Yeah.
There's
thank you.
Nice little graph there on the bottom right hand corner of 24. How are you handling the change in the retail market?
Gosh, you know, retail is very interesting. We don't.
I know there's opportunity there, but
yeah,
scares the hell out of me.
Yeah, so we're pretty much staying away from it. You can see
we have a rather significant.
We do already
commitment here to retail, right?
But so the way that we look at it is we're buying retail shopping centers that are needs-based shopping, so the people have to go into those shopping centers, and it's either going to be a pharmacy that's anchored there or a grocery store nationally.
But even those markets are changing rapidly.
They are changing rapidly. But, I mean, Ross just went into our property down in Miami at Kendall, mm-hmm. and Five Below. That's that newer company that's just filled right. with lots of mm-hmm. toys and stuff. So they just occupied 18,000 square feet down there in our Kendall property. And then Jacksonville keeps continuing to do well. I mean, we've had that property for a long time. I think the one actually in Kendall did so well that they built another shopping center right down the road with Publix. Publix is doing so well down there. It's a very residential area in that particular area. So we obviously, Amazon occupies some of our industrial properties, and they bought bricks and mortar. So everybody thinks that all these companies are going towards e-commerce, where now they're actually doing mixed.
No, but that's a very different type of property.
Right.
Right. I mean, yes, it may be replacing or supplanting retail operations, but excuse me, it's typically, as you mentioned earlier, industrial type property is not built at the same level, same standards, same cost structure that retail, traditional retail type properties are built, right?
Right. I wasn't sure where you're coming from. I was just talking retail in general, but so yeah, in what specifically? As far as retail properties, yeah, we're not really. The only thing we are doing is mixed use. So if we find a multifamily, for instance, in Delray Beach, and it has retail on the bottom. But I think we have three properties currently that have Whole Foods on the bottom. Another good company to work with. It's also owned by Amazon. But yeah. What else are you thinking? What's
so
on your mind?
So when, how are your tenants procured? Are you typically in these transactions of acquisition, are they typically already full properties? Are you buying them empty, leasing them up? Or are you handling your own leasing operations? Are you outsourcing that?
So two things. We target properties that are on average 90% leased.
With what sort of terms?
They all vary.
3 years, 5 years, or do you have a target of long-term lease you're looking at?
Well, obviously, we want to lock into the long-term leases with escalations. And I can tell you, previous to 2 years ago, we were making some concessions. Now it's changed. Now we're putting the escalations in, trying to fight inflation, put 3-4% escalations into these leases. But it varies sometimes. Sometimes we would prefer to do a shorter lease because we're not sure what's going to happen geopolitically.
Of course.
What's happening, you know. So
I'm not talking about individual, you know, special situations, because you can always have one of those.
Yeah. But for the most part, we're locking in those long-term leases.
How did your organization get information or develop information on future market trends? Do you do it internally? Are you?
Mm-hmm. Good question. We have a research department. We have two gentlemen that are constantly, they're doing top down, they're doing bottom up, they're looking at every market, they're looking at all the economics of every city, and then of course our four property types to see where we want to be. And that's part of our Monday meetings. I mean, the research comes in there and they talk about what they're saying.
Do you have the ability to purchase real estate outside of the U.S.?
We do not choose to currently. Our documents are not legally. We cannot at this time. But we also could not have had anybody invest outside the U.S. into this fund. And we opened that up about 4 years ago. We went from a LLC to an LP to allow outside investors, and we currently have three Dutch investors. But we're getting looked at a lot by Japanese companies, Canadian, down in South America. They come and they look and they evaluate. I mean, everybody seems to be really interested in the United States real estate. So that's good.
Thanks.
Are you in commercial real estate?
No.
Oh. What's your background?
I'm just a bum rolled in off the street.
I'd like to know where you're coming from, just so I can...
Oh, I manage pension funds.
You what?
Manage pension funds.
Oh, in Florida and outside?
All across the U.S.
Oh,
international,
that's
great. Some.
Okay, well, good. Well, nice to meet you down here in Florida.
All right, if there are no other questions from the board, then we'll go ahead and turn the presentation back over to Dave and have you go through. Rochelle, are you staying? Are you heading out, or...?
He said he would dismiss me because I've listened to his presentation the past couple days. I could probably do it.
Then allow
we might prefer that.
Allow us to thank you for making the time to come.
Thank you.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
Dinner reservations.
Thank you. All right. Going back to the ANCO main portion of the presentation, before we get into the book, I'd just like to take 30 seconds to give you the ANCO infomercial, if I may, or firm update. Every year, Mike, my president and CEO, puts together a State of ANCO address, and we put that in this quarter's book. We also have a corporate lockdown every year, first week of January. It's a three-day corporate outing. We're going over what worked, what didn't work, and what our strategies are, and obviously recognizing individuals for their efforts for the year. But as we update the firm, as we enter 2019, we're 89 employees strong now, and that's with offices across the country, and as you're aware, we've been slowly, carefully acquiring other similar firms with a similar business model and independent, transparent business model. With that, we're advising, even with the market correction, we are advising over $90 billion in assets now. And one thing that I get excited about is the firm continues to reinvest into resources for the firm. So not only professionals, but you know, software, whatever items are necessary for research. As a field person, consultant in consulting clients, I'm very excited because I am supported by a very deep professional research team. We have 14 professionals now. We have two individuals that are overseeing the real estate area. That's their focus. So they're in touch with American Realty, you know, on an ongoing basis. That's their job. And, you know, very deep team. We continue to add to that team, particularly in the alternatives area as that evolves. And, you know, finally, I said it at the last meeting, but on behalf of my colleagues who don't make it out here, you know, we'd like to take this opportunity through this letter to thank you for your business. We appreciate the opportunity to work for this board over several years now. We've been through quite a bit. So that's any questions on ANCO? We remain committed to, fiercely committed to our independent business model, and you know, no revenue sharing and attainment of fees from any other source other than the hard quarterly fees that that we charge in arrears to you. So with that, let me go into the first page, and actually it'll be page two, but first page of content here. And just a recap, I know everyone here, we're all financial professionals for the most part on this board. Everyone's aware of the huge pendulum swing and sentiment that took place. Thankfully, just as a reminder, because I think it's important because it does set up what happened for the quarter, if you advance to the back of the book, on page 21, if you recall, we closed the fiscal year September 2018 with a total fund return, a net return of 11.34%, and we handily retired the actuarial required rate of return with some very nice margin. But what worked for us in 2011, as they say, as we left the porch and entered into 2019, the screen door came and hit us in the behind pretty hard. And again, most of the returns that we're going to be looking at are direct function of the asset allocation that is that has been working so well. We did have a pretty substantial pullback that resulted in some painful numbers to look at here. Also, I think importantly, a lot of the move in the market was exaggerated. I think it's important to point out that algorithmic computer program trading now really dominates daily volume. And if you look, I think it was JP Morgan that put out a recent piece. There's a number of white papers out on it, but basically 10% of the daily trading volume is actually real. You've got an investment manager that wants to own a stock or they want to sell a stock. The other 90% of the volume is comprised of computer trading, either through indexing the various index fund forms or just outright algorithmic high-frequency trading. So there's a lot of noise in the market. I mentioned this because it did arguably contribute to the volatility. It's kind of a self-feeding frenzy once the programs kick in. And from peak to trough, if we looked at the trough being the day before Christmas, that was a total decline of some 20%. And that happened very, very quickly. And if you look at what transpired in the bond market, we're always looking across for confirmations, right, of is this real or, you know, are all markets buying into this? And if you look at what happened in the bond market, bond interest rates declined modestly. So that gives one the impression that either A, the bond market has already discounted a recession or slowdown in the economy, or B, more likely, they're just not buying into this at this time. And we would take the latter scenario. So with that being said, the other macro factor that had an impact more on other systems than here, obviously we're 100% indexed with our domestic equity allocation here. That may have worked better for us during the quarter. As we look across our managers, most managers were positioned, whether they were growth or value, with a growth orientation, you know, a continued economic prosperity in mind in the selection and the emphasis of their underlying stock investments. So that meant during this period of risk off, when everyone went defensive, those managers tended to underperform, and the average underperformance, unfortunately, was about 1%, maybe to 2% across the board. And also similarly, in the bond market, anything with a credit rating associated with it, particularly a lower credit rating, underperformed in price much more. So this whole risk-off phenomenon, fast forward to January, we had almost a mirror reversal, not quite, probably about two-thirds of the way back across markets with price recovery going on. So with that as the backdrop, looking at the top right chart on page two, domestic equities, the S&P 500 for this period was down 13.5%, small cap stocks down 20%. International equities down across the board. And for the first time in several quarters, we did see positive returns in bonds. Bloomberg Barclays aggregate, our proxy for U.S. investment grade bonds, was up 1.6%. And interestingly, if you look down at the 1 year performance, and again, thank goodness we're on a September fiscal year end, for those private sector corporations that are looking at 1 year performance for periods ended December, pretty much across the board in generic asset classes, returns were negative. So unless you had hard asset real estate or some other similar variation of that product type, even hedge funds as a community did not fare particularly well during 2012. So that was the environment that we were invested in. So let's advance to the bottom line here, and let me bring you up, take you up to page 18, I believe. And if you follow with me on the top line, the total fund net for the quarter saw a decline of 9.47%. And this is a little bit worse than the target, self-imposed target policy. We'll talk about where that deficit came from. The three-year number for periods ended December annualizes at negative 3.51%. And obviously with the 3 and 5 year moving effective returns there, we're bringing down those averages. For some perspective, if you drop down to the total fund gross line, and again, as we've talked about before, we are not adding back mutual fund fees into this number, so it's not a pure gross number. We ended up in the 80th percentile for the quarter or fiscal year to date, not particularly pretty. But as we go through the asset allocation, we have had a above median allocation to equities, which has helped us get the job done over time, and we expect will continue to help us get the job done over time. So a lot of other systems were invested perhaps a little bit more conservatively. Also, the margin of error there between peer group rankings is actually pretty small for the period. The three-year number annualizing at 747, we're still preserving our outperformance to the benchmark and top fifth percentile peer group showing. The five-year number annualizing at 6.3, outperformance to the benchmark preserved and top fourth percentile. So we continue to preserve, even though this was a particularly rough quarter, our relative standing to the various benchmarks. So let's go to page 19. Let me take you through the component pieces here. The Vanguard Total Stock Market Index comprises, again, all of our domestic equity allocation, obviously in line with the market declining 14.26. The RBC fund, the Polaris Group managing that out of Boston, declining a little bit more than the market on the quarter. They were down 14 versus 2.5, so some of that underperformance came from RBC. However, this is rather unusual. Their three-year number is almost a double to the benchmark at 6.03, and the five-year number is more than a double to the benchmark at 3.26%, and their peer group numbers and even inception numbers going back to November of 2007. This manager continues to perform very well, but like most managers, did have a more of a prosperity tilt to their stock selection in the portfolio, so they were hit on the quarter. Jumping into fixed income, the Galliard Core Fixed Income Fund, about in line, trailing slightly to the benchmark, a grand 1.51%. Again, this is the downside to having a less interest rate sensitive portfolio. When interest rates decline and bond prices rise, we've got a manager that has managing to a benchmark that is less sensitive to those changes. But again, as I previously reported, the aggregate bond index, which includes all maturities, long maturities, the return was basically the same. No loss there, no opportunity cost there during this period of time. TIPS portfolio, obviously anything with an inflation tilt to it, even if it's a U.S. high quality treasury, was basically flat on the quarter, or down a half. The short-term bond fund, short-term rates were kind of exempted from any move here, up a percent on the fiscal year to date. PIMCO Diversified Income Fund, as everyone on this board is aware, does invest in rated securities, and they can invest in sub-investment grade rated securities. So with the flight to quality, they underperformed their benchmark here. But if we look at the longer-term numbers with this manager, if we had them in place, their 3 and 5 year numbers are well ahead of the benchmark, and their peer group, they're actually ranked number one in their peer group. So the near-term results are, unfortunately, we weren't able to bring them on until later for various reasons here, but they're off a little bit on the quarter, which puts them a little bit behind since their inception date here of April 1 of 18. Jumping down into the real estate portfolio, as Rochelle reported, American Realty is annualizing quarterly results right around 8.75%. Intercontinental, which is our more aggressive, the leverage question came up. Intercontinental is running around 40% leverage in their fund. They've got a value adds segment there. They're annualizing at 10.75%. Again, both managers just continued steady. It doesn't matter what is going on in the equity market over the intermediate term with these products. They're just clipping off very nice, steady returns for this portfolio. So very helpful during the down market for equities, and obviously extremely helpful on a cumulative basis in lieu of investment in investment grade fixed income securities. Last but not least, page 20, our middle market debt. Again, this is updated in arrears, right? Because we do not have the manager results for this quarter. So you're looking at an inception return from the updated from the previous quarter. So the Crescent Direct Lending Fund, by our calculation for contribution here, is 7.65%, and for the levered for the two fund is fund two. I'm sorry, is 6.15%. The actual returns of those funds and tracking the cash flows, which we did revise in our cash flow statement. Board Member Blake pointed out an issue. We did correct that and subsequently immediately turned that in. But we break out the actual IRRs on page 41 and page 42, so we can track those a little bit more closely. And the inception IRR for Crescent Direct Lending Fund 1 Down on the bottom right, bottom left is 7.6%, and for Fund 2 at 6.1%. So different, as this board knows, different return calculation methodology, and then we have to work that through so that it comes in and shows a proper contribution to the total fund investments in the asset allocation. So any questions on the percentage returns? All right, let's go to cash flow on page 16. And if you follow with me on the bottom line there, the total fund opened up the fiscal year with $52,947,850. Our net transfers show the cash raises, capital calls, return of funds, distributions coming out of the Crescent Fund, basically movement within the investment portfolio. Contributions, member city contributions for the quarter totaled $892,841. Our distributions for member benefit payments, $768,705. Investment fees as invoiced and paid by the custodian only totaled $52,296. Other expenses line items and shoring up fee schedules here totaled $28,556. The income component is broken down into real estate distributions, bond dividends, and stock dividends, $256,756, which was nowhere near enough of an offset for the depreciation figure for the period, which was $5,217,496. So that left us with a lower ending market value December 31st of $48,030,374. Now, fast forwarding to January with the recovery, snapback recovery that ensued. The portfolio has recovered about half to two thirds of the decline. So the fiscal year to date number as of January 3rd, 31st, now stands at a decline of 4.23%. So we recovered more than half of the decline, but obviously we are still challenged fiscal year to date, to get back to break even. And obviously our primary objective here is to achieve the actuarial required rate of return.
So what's the market value as of 1/31?
The market value, does not include either real estate manager. Those are going to be carried forward at last quarter's value, and it does not include the Crescent, either of the two middle market debt funds. And that market value, bear with me, is $51,246,079. So at $51,246 carry forward with the carry forwards versus $52,947 opening for the fiscal year. So it's been a pretty good recovery, notwithstanding cash flows that took place during the month. So. Addressing.
Were there any significant cash flows during that time period from quarter end to this time, or is it just standard? I mean, was there a large funding that happened, or are we funding it on a monthly basis?
I'd have to go in and look at the specific
distributions
cash flows.
Distributions would be relatively flat, I would think. But
yeah, I think the cash flows were the normal contribution and distribution flows in the system.
And we're running slightly negative, or slightly positive, I
slightly
think.
Slightly positive,
cash flows,
yeah.
Is what I meant to say, right? Okay.
Any questions on the return calculations?
You've done a great job the last 40 days.
The last what?
40 days.
Yes. Let's look at the asset allocation, and to do that, let's go to page 12, and I'm going to provide also a bit of a verbal update. Obviously, with market dynamics, a lot has changed in these numbers. On page 12, as of December 31st, because of the equity market correction, we ended up in a underweight position to domestic equities to the target of 1.6% and marginally overweight the international equity at 0.9%, and our domestic fixed income moved a little bit closer to the target with that relative value change there, but still pretty close to the target. As of January 31st, our domestic equity is now only 0.4 off the target, and international equity has moved to a 1.4% overweight. And domestic fixed income, again, with that relative juxtapositioning there, is now 1.2% underweight. So as we discussed last quarter, and as we had been discussing previous quarters, as this cycle becomes very long, not suggesting, you know, we had any crystal ball to anticipate what transpired last quarter, you know, we're suggesting maintaining a portfolio allocation that's much closer to the mark. Previously, we were operating with a very with great intention in the overweight to domestic equity. We also, for better or worse, had a modest overweight to international equity, and we had a pretty significant underweight to investment-grade fixed income. And we were carrying that for quite some time. So, again, as previously discussed, as part of our move to bring the portfolio to a more conservative, neutral posture going forward, you know, I would suggest that no rebalancing action is necessary at this time. We're pretty close to the targets. If we were able to meet maybe, you know, the last week of December, I think we would have had a rebalancing opportunity. You know, and you know, we could have recommended that, but much of that market snapback, I think, erases the immediate opportunity that would have shown up on the daily calculation of our asset allocation positioning. So bottom line,
yep.
I have no asset allocation change recommendations and no manager issues or manager change allocations.
Dave, with respect to the rebalancing, this happens automatically, right? Refresh my memory about what the guidelines are, how far underweight or overweight before you automatically trigger a rebalance.
Right, and it's not automatic. I would like to suggest it's set up to be both systematic and allows us some leeway to hopefully enhance via overweights and underweights over the market cycle. So the systematic part of the rebalancing that keeps us all honest is we're basically running our equities to the 5% rule. So as has happened in the past, when equities run up to the upper limit, I'm going to bring that to the attention of the committee, and we will be recommending how that triggers a rebalancing. So that's the systematic component.
But that does not require an approval from us to do.
Yes, it does.
It does.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, for our part, and I know you guys will appreciate it, for our part, we serve as an advisor. So, you know, we're not authorized to complete any transactions. So we would absolutely be advising that we take that action, and then we'll go ahead and put together the administrative paperwork that's necessary. But then that will require authorization from the appropriate channels to get that done.
Thanks for clarifying.
And then within that, the second part of the answer, I guess, obviously, is, you know, we can continue to manage so that we do have overweights and underweights, but obviously within the constraints of the outer band set with the investment policy.
Then is our meeting quarterly nimble enough?
Yes.
It is.
Yes.
You feel that?
Yes. In the grand scheme, you know, we would never be able to market time Looking at all the studies and white papers that have been done, if you move with too much frequency, you dilute the benefits.
Right. I'm just thinking of December when you're saying there might have been an opportunity for rebalancing. You know, can we, would it make sense to have like a phone-in meeting or something if you raise the flag and say, we need to look at this?
I would suggest not. Because we're speaking with 2020 vision.
Right.
And to have this set up with this type of structure, with these parameters, guiding parameters, the thought process behind that is that there should be some material accumulation that is sufficient enough so that if we do rebalance, we are getting a benefit. And that usually takes time. Obviously, going back to 2009, it didn't matter if we would have had meetings on a monthly basis. we would have recommended rebalancing, but we might have had a few too many short-term rebalancings in there. Ultimately, that was absolutely the correct thing to do. But with a larger accumulation, that provides for a better opportunity to dollar cost average either out of winners or into laggards. So I think the timeline being what it is probably most optimal and certainly appropriate for institutional management like this. Is that my addressing your question?
Yes.
Is that the end of your report, Dave?
That was my conclusion, unless anyone else had any
Mr. Chairman?
Question.
Sir?
Move approval and acceptance of the report for Q1 2019 and approval of recommendation to maintain the portfolio positions.
I would second. I'm not sure it requires a motion, but I concur. Does everybody agree? Do we feel the need to?
No, that's usually not a motion.
Understood.
Should
but do we feel the need to?
Should be an official act of the committee to make decisions.
Okay. David, thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Mr. Chairman, did you find the motion out of order?
Oh, boy, I'm going to have to.
Because there's a motion. There's
well,
a motion and
there
a second.
A motion,
so.
There was, well, what's the appropriate disposition of
if
the
your motion?
Motion
was just to approve and accept the report, or was there a second part that I missed?
The second part. The first part was to accept the report as presented.
Mm-hmm.
Second part was to approve the recommendation to make no changes to the portfolio.
Well, I'll tell you what.
That's appropriate.
I'll second that motion and let's call a vote and then we can talk about necessity going forward for future meetings.
Well, we should discuss that before a vote is called.
Well,
frankly,
if nothing's changed, well, I'm fine either way. So I don't know if the board has a thought about this. We've historically not voted on it, which doesn't mean it was right, wrong, or indifferent. It just means that we haven't, especially when there are no changes being presented or recommended. So does anybody have any strong feelings one way or the other?
Okay.
Okay.
We can make it, yeah.
I'm not going to press it, but the point is to create a record of what was received and what action has
mm-hmm.
taken,
That's
even
fine.
If that action is no action in this case, because that is, in effect, an action as well.
And there is a motion and a second.
Our advisors come to us and provided us with a recommendation, and we should at least acknowledge that that recommendation has been made, in my opinion, and act on that recommendation one way or another.
All right. Well, then, since the motion's been raised and seconded, let's go ahead and call a vote.
Board Member Blake?
Aye.
Vice Chairperson Paris?
Aye.
Chairperson Withy?
Aye.
Board Member Watkins?
Aye.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Sir.
Just a question. I'm not trying to change things. That wasn't the purpose of that, but
it's a fine idea.
In this world, we really should endeavor to have a good, clear record of all actions that have occurred. Keep in mind what we're talking about here are millions of dollars for the benefit of employees who could find themselves in a position to come back to us and say, you didn't do things quite right. And because of that, I'm an injured party.
Okay. Well, I certainly appreciate the feedback and the concern, and I'm not opposed to making that a part of how the board operates going forward.
Do we need a motion on that?
That was really just a start. You can make a motion.
Let's go ahead and get through the rest of the agenda, because we pushed off one item in the beginning. Oh, let's, I guess I should open it. Well, public input should wait till after the final agenda item.
Okay.
All right, one of the items we pushed to the end of the agenda was officer elections for 2019. So I don't know if you have any thoughts on the idea. We, Stephen's not here tonight, obviously,
right.
And so I don't know what his thoughts on the subject are. There obviously are four of us, there is a quorum, and we can take whatever action we deem appropriate, but since none of us have really talked about this with each other, I have no idea who is interested in what and where we are. So with that inartful opening, before we get into chairperson and vice chairperson elections, is there anybody who has an interest in these things?
I'd be interested in vice chairman.
Okay.
And I'd be happy to step down.
Okay.
That's not a problem for me.
More of a side thing.
Yeah.
Do you have any thoughts on the issue?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, are you willing or eager to serve again?
I am, actually. In the middle of a term, based on when it occurred, which is the middle of last year. So I would be perfectly happy to see 2019 through and then visit again.
Mr. Chairman, I'll make a motion to retain chairmanship.
I second it.
Chairperson Withy?
Aye.
Board Member Watkins?
Aye.
Vice Chairperson Paris?
Aye.
Board Member Blake?
I forgot to ask, is that a paying position?
No, it comes with Reese's.
You got the chocolate.
You got the
chocolate.
You have our undying affection.
And I thought this was a mint. So
darn.
Okay, that brings us to Vice Chair.
I nominate Barb.
Second.
Okay. Vice Chairperson Paris?
Aye.
Board Member Blake?
Aye.
Chairperson Withy?
Aye.
Board Member, nope, he's not here. Board Member Watkins?
Aye.
Okay, and the last agenda item is for public input. With what a lovely crowd we have. Yes, with your Snuggie, you're ready to go, I know. Okay, well then we'll close public input. And is there anything else, Antonia?
No, happy Valentine's Day.
And to you.
Thank you all for coming.
And to you, and with that, the meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.
I apologize for being late.
Oh,